Doctor, is something wrong?
The double gear system. It was so very long ago. It was on that day, Wiley and I had our falling out. He quite literally threw a wrench in our gears.
What is up? Welcome to An Express, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of the voices, Tim Mason. Here with me is Patrick Murphy.
What's up, Tim? I don't get to say that tagline this week.
Yeah, because Ricky D is back, as promised. How's it going, Rick?
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? Guys, I'm a little worried because we have all sorts of tech problems today. I don't know how the recording's going to turn out. I'm hoping it sounds good, so I apologize in advance to our listeners if there are problems, but hey, we're back.
Everyone send a quick prayer up to Arceus, the Pokemon god, and those that aren't big Pokemon fans think I'm joking. But
I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah,
is that a real thing?
That is a real thing. It's where Pokemon went a little too far. And I bring up Pokemon now because this week's episode is about Pokemon Let's Go. We're also doing a discussion of Gamescom versus E3, which is the better conference, with our guest, Alex Aldridge. How's it going, Alex?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
I am doing great. I can't help but notice that you have an accent. Alex, where are you from?
I do indeed. I am from England, where it is pitch black right now.
Yeah, it's a very different time right now.
Yeah.
But that means that you are much closer to Gamescom than any of us, which is...
I was very close this year. I was in it.
So we're going to have that as our main discussion, as all of us just went to E3, and we all have very strong opinions. So we're going to compare the two. But since you're a first-time guest, we do a little game called Five Questions.
Oh,
we're going to shoot off five super rapid questions. Just answer them to the most honest of your ability.
I'm scared, but go.
All right, Rick.
Okay, Alex, we got five random questions to ask you just to ease you into the conversation. So my very first question for you is, what is the best video game that Nintendo released that never got released in Europe?
Probably Sin and Punishment until it came on the Wii.
Okay, it never got released in Europe.
I don't think so. It just came out in Japan, right?
Yeah, it never got released in North America either.
Yeah.
The reason why I ask is because we were talking about this on the last, well, not the last show, the second last show. We were talking about what characters can possibly be included in Super Smash, and we mentioned Geno. And if I'm not wrong, Legend of the Seven Stars never got released in Europe, so Geno and anything related to that game doesn't really have a big following in Europe.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that dude before.
Oh, oh wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, so you might be right, or it may have just passed me by completely and I ignored it, but I did not recognize him whatsoever.
Okay. Question number two, what is your favorite video game console of all time?
N64.
Yeah, oh, right answer.
Man, Tim's got another one.
Okay, I'm assuming that you like sports, and I'm guessing you like soccer, European football. What is your
proper
favorite
football, yeah.
What is your favorite sports game of all time?
That's a good question. I will say International Superstar Soccer 64 or Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey.
Oh, yeah. That's a great game.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no. Both games are amazing. I love that 64 soccer game. Like, I think when we made our list of the best 64 games, I'm confident it landed on our top 25.
Oh, it's brilliant. So, it's like prison rules football. You cannot get a yellow card in that game. Whatsoever. You can do anything you want. You can Zidane headbutt someone and you still won't get booked. It's fantastic.
That's like the only way you could improve the sport, honestly.
Oh yeah, just more violence.
Yeah.
So without doing any harm to anyone, you can destroy one of the two companies that I'm about to mention, right? So nobody gets harmed, like, but you can destroy these companies. Who would you choose? EA or Activision?
Oh, man.
I'd say EA, because if we destroy Activision, we don't get to play Sekiro, right? So no one wants that.
Or would we liberate them? Liberate Bungie.
Oh, we could do, yeah. No, it still has to be EA. I really don't think they have any interest in making things for the sake of people having fun and enjoying them anymore. So I'd say EA for sure. Because I could still play Wayne Gretzky and ISS without EA around, so it's all good.
That's right. Yeah, EA just makes sports games, essentially. I mean, they don't really do a whole lot. They don't contribute a whole lot to the landscape.
Actually, that's not true. What EA does is they buy several small independent video game companies and they run them to the ground. They're very good at destroying people's lives.
Oh, yeah.
Last question. I feel like I should ask you something controversial, but I think I'm just going to play it safe.
I'll say something controversial soon enough. Don't worry about that.
Okay, well, what is your favorite video game of this generation?
Probably Bloodborne.
Okay.
I think. It's not really good for a Nintendo show, is it? So, should we say Breath of the Wild for Nintendo? But Bloodborne for this generation, definitely.
Bloodborne's a cool answer, though.
I think you passed all five questions. Thank you so much, and thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, it's going to be a jam-packed episode. Let's just get rolling with what we've been playing this week. Patrick, you playing anything new?
Well, Tim, I have been playing Pokemon Let's Go. Let's Go Pikachu, I should add. I'm not one of the cool kids who chose Eevee for some reason, because Pikachu still is the best Pokemon. Yeah, that's what I've been playing. We're going to get to that later on in the show, but I've been playing a lot of that. Otherwise, I just downloaded SteamWorld Heist, which is a game that I lost track of, wanted to get last generation, never actually picked up. I'm a big fan of the SteamWorld games, and I know this one's a little different. It's a strategy-based game, but comes highly recommended from everybody, so I finally buckled down and bought it on sale.
And what do you think? I think that one's really cool.
What do I think? What?
What do you think of it? Have you played it at all?
SteamWorld Heist? No, I just downloaded it, so I have not played it.
You are. It's very different, but you are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like the kind of thing that I'm going to like a lot. I need something to play before Smash Brothers comes out. Because I think I am going to get that. Unbelievably, I think I am going to get that.
Proud of you. Yeah, I've just been playing Pokemon. So, Alex, how about you?
I've mainly been playing Octopath Traveler, which I'm assuming you guys must have talked about at length before.
We did.
Yes. But
it'd be nice to discuss like who people like and dislike in terms of the characters in that game. Because...
Oh, yeah, thoughts on that.
Oh, the Thief. The Thief is the worst character in the entire game.
That's what I started with.
He's terrible. He is awful. His accent is... Oh, his voice just is like nails on chalkboard to me.
I play it with the volume off quite a lot, mainly because of the Hunter woman, because, good lord, I can't hear her ever again. She's my main character, so I have no choice. But... I love the Thief guy is the king of ludonarrative dissonance, right? Because every time I go up and start a side quest with somebody who desperately needs my help, as soon as they're done talking, I just nick something off them. And it makes me very, very happy.
Yes, exactly.
That's great.
I don't like the apothecary guy. I just don't see what purpose he serves.
He's a little too nicey-nice. He's like the perfect person. Him and the cleric girl are just these... absolutely perfect people. They should in a romantic comedy they would have ended up together, but
yeah,
I think they definitely need, you know, people balancing them out.
She's super useful though. Without I would have that cleric girl in all the time for the healing.
Oh, I did. Yeah, she was in my party all the time for sure. And the knight, because he's just a tank.
Yeah, he's a dude. I don't like the merchant girl either, because she does that, like, she celebrates every time she says anything with like a little puts her hand up in the air. And also she pays people for stuff instead of stealing it, like my hero, the thief guy. So
yeah,
her little animations though are so 16-bit RPG. I mean, that reminds me of Square 100%.
I got a question for you guys. So I've never played the game. I decided to skip it, at least until maybe the Christmas holidays. But like, the thing about this game is a lot of people seem to like it, but I do not know anyone who had the motivation or the drive to actually finish the game. And to me, that's a sign of a game that's problematic.
Yeah, how far into it are you, Alex? I did not finish. I played it for about 30 hours. I think I made it about two-thirds of the way through the game, and then I kind of stopped.
Yeah, I think the last time I checked the time stamp on it, it was about 30 hours. I've probably got about two chapter twos left, and then I reckon I will finish it, though, because I just don't have anything else to do on my lunch breaks at work. And that's why I bought it, because it is pretty good for drop in, drop out. There's save points everywhere. It's pretty mindless. You don't really need to hear the sound.
No, and it's almost better without the voice acting.
yeah, definitely. And it's deep, but it's also kind of basic enough that it doesn't really require your memory of anything specific to enjoy it. Still, like, you cannot play it for ages, and you can go back and read the journals, and the combat is so simplistic that it doesn't really, like, you don't forget how to play it, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. The mechanics are simple enough. You don't have to remember all the different buffs and things like that. You just sort of have to remember how to break. As long as you remember how to break, you're doing fine.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always written on the screen anyway. Every enemy has what they're vulnerable to right underneath it. So it's not like something like Final Fantasy VII, where you need to remember a whole ton of different, you know, mechanics for adding stuff to weapons and all this kind of stuff. It's pretty straightforward.
Right. Exactly.
It's not groundbreaking or anything. Like, I don't know if it would hold me to play it solidly throughout its however many 60, 70, 80-hour campaign, but I don't think I use my Switch for anything like that anymore. It's just, what can I spend an hour on every lunchtime or, you know, in bed? And that fits the mold perfect.
But that's the key success to Nintendo Switch. Like, Definitely. You just said it. You play it at lunch, at work. Like, I just watched this 42-minute video interview with Reggie, and he said that the whole purpose in the rethinking of Nintendo and the brand and making the Switch is they are always fighting for everyone's time when it comes to entertainment, right? So when you're not at work working, when you're not at school learning, it's basically your free time, your entertainment time. So it's like they are competing not just with PlayStation, not just with Xbox, that they're not just competing with Steam, they are competing with YouTube and the movie industry and whatever it is that people do on their free time. And that is the beautiful thing about the Switch, because if that game got released on, say, the PlayStation 4 and was exclusive to the PlayStation 4, I don't know if it would have sold as well. Maybe it would, because PlayStation 4 has a huge, like, what, 80-plus million, like, user base? Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that's the thing about the Nintendo Switch is, like, a lot of people are buying so many games just because they can take it on the go and they have that luxury. Like, a game like Yooka-Laylee, which flopped on every single system, apparently it sold like over a million copies on a Switch. And I'm sure it's just because people are willing to give it a chance and they can play it on the go. Like having that, like, I guess what I'm trying to say here is, like, for me personally, like, when I play a game that I'm not so hot on or I want to take a chance on, I'm not playing it during what I call, like, my true free time. Like, I'm playing it, like, on the go. Like, it's like, if I'm at home, I'm going to put on, I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to put on what I really, really, really want to play, right?
Yeah.
On the bus, I don't mind playing something like Chicken Bomb, which, by the way, is still one of the best games of the year. Got to give a shout out to that every 2 weeks, just to remind people it exists and go buy the damn game. It's on the Switch. It's awesome. But yeah, so anyhow, I think I'll pick it up eventually around the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, you're right, though. It's a garbage time console. That's what it's for. Like, I've bought Hollow Knight again on there because there's no way I was going to play Hollow Knight in front of a big TV in my house because I've got way better stuff to play than that. So,
well, that's the thing. Like, it's oversaturated right now, the video game industry. I mean, and you also have to remember, when you have a game like Red Dead come out and you have Assassin's Creed and you have to put in like 60 to 200 hours into each of these games, it doesn't give you much time to play like the smaller games. So, like, I personally, like, I'm telling you guys, the Nintendo Switch, I know this is a Nintendo podcast, it is currently my favorite console on the market. It's one of my favorite video game systems of all time. It is right now my favorite video game system, period. I mean, I love my PS4. It was my favorite system for like 4 years. Right now, the Switch is my favorite system. And maybe it's because I've had the PS4 for too long and I'm waiting for the PS5, but the Switch is just, apart from the voice chat, it's pretty much doing everything right.
I think part of what we're describing is also what the 3DS did so well, is that it could just fill really small time holes in your life, and that just really felt great, especially when you had an exceptional title on there like Animal Crossing New Leaf, and the Switch can fill that same role on top of being a home console, and there's something just so novel about that, that it can be both consoles. It can be like the spare time console and you'll play a smaller JRPG, or it can be the home console where you spend 200 hours playing Breath of the Wild. And I think that's so novel and still so incredible 2 years later.
Yeah. Have you been playing anything else?
Well, you wanted to talk about Mega Man 11, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, let's hear about that. I don't think any of us got Mega Man 11.
No.
Well, okay, so first of all, I actually bought the Mega Man pack, which came with Mega Man 1 to 6. I played up to 3. We haven't talked about it because we've talked plenty about Mega Man 1, 2, and 3 in the past in the podcast. I think that whole package is incredible. I love the new additions. I think the game looks fantastic. I like the fact that you can play in 4 different ways in terms of like how the visual presentation. Like, you can change it up, right? You can go, like, old school, make it, like, a box. You can, like, widen the screen, which I don't know why you would want to do. But I picked up Mega Man 11 after playing 1, 2, 3, and actually I started 4. And so being a huge fan of those original 6 Mega Man games and Mega Man X, one of my favorite games of all time, I was pretty hyped, right? Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, like, going from playing 4 old school Mega Man games to Mega Man 11, I got to say that in many ways, and I don't know, Alex, if you agree, in many ways, Mega Man 11 is 100% what a Mega Man game should be, unlike Mighty No. 9, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think the controls are fantastic. The animation is fun. It's colorful. It looks great. Probably the best-looking Mega Man game I've ever played. Well, actually, I actually think Mega Man X looks better, but whatever. But holy guys, damn, this game is hard. And like, I finished Mega Man 1, 2, 6 back in the days, you know, without any of those like save states that you get on like the Wii U or the Nintendo Switch package, and I was able to somehow, I don't know how, back in the days I was able to finish those games. So I'm a pretty good player when it comes to like the Mega Man franchise. Mega Man 11, like, it's hard. Like, even the first stage, like, if you pick Block Man, which I decided to go with Block Man, apparently that's the order, like, you know how Mega Man, like, specific order. And yeah, by following a specific order, it makes the game easier for you, because when you get so-and-so weapon from the villain that you just beat, it will help you beat the next boss. So I started with the Blockman stage, and that is, like, one of the toughest stages I've ever played, and that's, like, the first stage of this game. This game is really hard.
It's mercilessly hard as well. It's like they're trying to make a point about it, how hard it is.
I actually switched the settings, the difficulty settings, and I put it to easy. And it was still bloody hard. Like, easy on Mega Man 11 is equivalent to playing the normal hard mode on Mega Man, say, 3.
Yeah, the Mega Man series definitely got easier as it went along. I think that's the consensus, right? Like, 4 and 5 and 6 were way easier than 1 and 2 and 3. But I remember feeling exactly like you did with 11, just thinking, wait, hang on, I'm not terrible, right? This isn't... I've completed Mega Man 2 on the NES. Like, I know how to do these games. And it feels just like those games. So there can't be that much of a disconnect between that and this new one for me to suddenly be terrible. And then all of a sudden, I kind of sort of engaged more with the in-game store. And even though it feels dirty, I completed it quite easily with that. Because have you done much of that? Have you bought, like, just 9 lives and all that stuff? Because every time you game over, it pretty much says, do you want to go buy some stuff? And then the one time I thought about doing it, I had so many bolts or whatever that I could buy, like, 9 lives, all of the energy tanks, all of the little bird dude that pulls you up from the pits and everything like that. And it was a total breeze from then.
So wait. You're saying you had to spend actual real money?
No.
Oh,
just
okay.
just no, just from stuff you pick up in the world.
Okay, I got confused for a second. Yeah, I've been doing that, and I also have the amiibo. And so the thing about Mega Man 11 is, if you scan an amiibo, you get extra kind of like whatever it is they're going to give you, right? Energy tanks, whatever. And so having the amiibo helps, but even with the amiibo, I still find the game tough. Even with the what you can pick up and buy along the way, it makes the game easy. But dude, I'm playing it on easy mode. I finished about 8 Mega Man games in my life, you know, 1 to 6, Mega Man X, Mega Man X2, and whatever else I can't remember right now. And I'm playing this game on easy mode. It is, I don't know. I feel like, and it's weird because it could, like, my problem, Mega Man 3, we've talked about this game in the past. I think, like, a lot of people argue it's better than Mega Man 2, better than Mega Man 4. Like, those are usually the 3 games plus X that people say are, like, the best in the series. I think Mega Man 3 had the potential to be the best game in at least in the original six. But the problem with Mega Man 3 is the game was just so, like, not buggy, but it would slow down to a crawl sometimes while you're playing. Like, you're fighting a boss and there's so much happening on screen that the game would just slow down because it couldn't keep up with, like, the graphics. And even with the remastered version, I find that the game still kind of, like, chugs. It runs a little bit slow at times, which interferes with you, because when you're trying to get that precise timing and you're trying to, like, defeat a boss, it interferes with you. And so you can get damaged, hit, or even worse, die. This game, it's like the way they designed the levels, it's kind of like playing like a game like Celeste. Like, they purposely designed the levels and the platforms so you're going to get hit every 2 seconds. You're going to, like, there's always a chance for you to die. And I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I feel like to some degree I'm enjoying the game, but there's so much frustration that I can't just sit down and finish it in, like, a weekend. Like, I have to, like, put it down for, like, a few days because, like, it's just, like, overbearing sometimes.
It became very clear to me very quickly that it's very dangerous to have that frustrating of a game on a portable console, because if I want to throw a controller, I'm actually going to be throwing the entire console. And I had to keep reminding myself of that, especially on that like the balloon level. Have you done that one?
Yeah.
Good God. Oh man.
Oh my God. Anyhow, Mega Man
the save
11.
System's not good either. Not at all. Like, it's really difficult to save. I remember at one point I went to save it and I hadn't realized, like, there's two different screens, isn't there? There's a save and the load, and you have to use the shoulder buttons to switch between whether you're saving and loading. And I finally completed a level and went to save it and ended up loading the previous game before I'd finished the level. When the console nearly got chucked around, but I managed
to
respond.
Let me ask you a question. So let's say I get to the end of a level and I'm fighting a boss and I can't beat the boss and I just want to quit the level. Can you quit the level?
No, I don't think so. It doesn't auto-save at all. It's all manual, so I don't think it'll save anything you've done.
No, you can't. Exactly. Like, I think it's so frustrating because I got to the end of level and I can't beat the boss. I'm like, okay, so I'm just going to have to, like, you know, put my console to sleep. And the next day when I load up Mega Man, I'm going to be right back smack dab in the middle of this boss fight. And I'm just going to have to beat the guy if I want to progress and move on with the game. I have no choice. I have to beat the dude. I could be
wrong. You play nothing else until it's done.
Yeah. I could be wrong. There could be a way to do it. I just couldn't figure it out. Anyways, Mega Man 11, for our listeners, if you like tough games, if you like Mega Man, I recommend it. Just, like, be warned. It is super hard, even on easy. Get yourself a lot of amiibo. Pick up a lot of items. And good luck to you. Good luck. There's this company. I'm going to give a shout-out to them because they've been sending me all kinds of crazy stuff, which I guess is because they want me to promote it. But, hey, it's fine because I like what they're sending me. So Toink Toys. That's T-O-Y-N-K Toys. Go to their website, check it out. They sell a bunch of, like, video game merch. Not just video game stuff, like, related to TV and movies and stuff. So they sent me – have you guys ever seen the Figma?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Figma action figures that they make for video games. Yep. So they sent me the Link Twilight Princess action figure.
What?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I don't know if I've seen that one, but I don't think it's going to be like some kind of cheap, tiny thing they sent you, right? Those figures are normally pretty expensive and well-made.
Yeah, so this, it is. It's not like I love my amiibo, but it's not like an amiibo. It's about 4 times the size of an amiibo. The Figma action figure series, this is number 320, Link Twilight Princess. It took me like 3 hours to sort of like put them together. I couldn't even do it, to be honest. It was so complicated. I had to ask my nephew. I'm like, I can't figure this out. there's so many pieces. Like, because he has his, like, his crossbow. He has his grappling hook. He has his mace. He has a sword. He has, like, all of this stuff. You can change his face and his hat and stuff. It's really intense. Like, it's kind of intimidating. Like, I'm telling you guys, I could not figure it out. I had to ask my nephew, can you please help me out here. It took my nephew about 30 minutes to pretty much, like, get them all set up. It's pretty cool. It makes an actual, like, great collector's item. I would not buy it for kids. I'm telling you, man, because there's so many small pieces. The kid's going to eat a small piece and he's going to choke on it. It's 100% not for kids. It's really cool. But the thing is, they've been sending me all this stuff. And I know this is a Nintendo show, but they sent me a Fallout loot box, like one of those mystery boxes. And this can kind of, like, I guess, lead us into our main event. When we went to E3, I did not have a good time at E3. I wrote this big, huge, like 3,000-word article about it. And one of the things that really pissed me off at E3 was I ended up buying a lot of those mystery boxes that they have on the show floor. And when I got home, and I specifically went for the Nintendo mystery boxes, and when I got home, I was so disappointed with what was inside, because they advertise it as having like up to $100 worth of like merch, like that you're gonna get, but it's a crapshoot, right? You can get something you like, you might get something you don't like. The best thing I got in that loot box, the two loot boxes I bought at E3, the best thing I got was a Pikachu coffee mug. And the reason why I say that's the best thing is because I drink coffee all the time, and it's a Pikachu coffee mug. It's fantastic, right? But everything else was pure garbage. Like Zelda socks, like maybe Tim would wear it. Maybe I should give it to you. But I threw everything in the garbage. Like it was such garbage. Like I wasted my money, basically. But I got this Fallout box from them, and it's amazing. Like, holy cow. Like they actually send you some really, really good stuff. They sent me this it's sort of like a big, huge figure of the character from Fallout, the Vault Boy. And it not only does it charge your phone, but it holds your cell phone and it holds your video game controller.
And, oh, I've seen that. I was going to buy that, man. That's
amazing,
really cool.
Like, what I do is when I'm at work, I actually put my cell phone on, like, on the dude, like the Vault Boy, because he holds my cell phone. I can watch like YouTube videos because it holds it up. So it's like a little like screen. And then when I'm at home, it holds up my controller. In the package, they actually sent me a bottle of Nuka-Cola. Like, I don't know if you guys played the game, but it's one of the drinks in the game. It's
Are you irradiated now?
I'm telling you, I totally want to taste it. Like, I'm so tempted to taste it. But yeah, it's an actual bottle of Nuka-Cola. They had one of those bob head figures. I think that's what you call them. The head sort of like bobs back and forth. Which is really good stuff. So, like, yeah, if you're looking for some Christmas gifts, you might as well give a shout-out once again, because they're sending me free stuff, so why not? Toink Toys. They have a bunch of Nintendo stuff, too. A lot of those, like, mystery boxes and a bunch of, like, Nintendo action figures. So I'm sort of hoping they send me more stuff.
I bet you are.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah. Even the air freshener. Like, I wrote an article about it. Even the air freshener in the mystery box is super duper cool. Like, it's an air freshener. Like, I don't need an air freshener. Like, I don't have a car. I think I smell pretty good. I wear cologne and deodorant. So use deodorant, I should say. Not sure what I'm gonna do with the air freshener, but it's a Nuka-Cola air freshener. It looks pretty dope. So, like, just everything in the package was fantastic. So, unlike E3, which was kind of like a disaster.
And we're gonna talk about that right after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Otto, do you have any idea where Wily's gone to?
He's totally vanished, Mega Buddy! Maybe he decided to turn tail and run! Huh?
Welcome back to N-Express. We're at our main event, a discussion of Gamescom versus E3, the convention of the press and the convention of the people, which is better. Who's to say? But Rick, you were just talking about E3 and how you bought mystery boxes there. And I've just got to say, I think that this is only a recent addition now that the public is much more a part of E3. So the convention, its whole face is really, really changing. And it used to be, I think my first year, I don't remember seeing anything for purchase at all.
Really?
Yeah, it's because we're just there. Like, everyone that was there was press. And they were part of the media, or they were developers. So you were honestly just there to feel the games, get an impression of them, either for fun or for work. And now you've got a full-on people's convention where people expect to be able to buy stuff and want memorabilia, even though the press is either really into it or rolling their eyes at it. So,
yeah,
I think that's like new. I don't think that's something that E3 used to be about. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. But we already have a convention of the people. The biggest one in the world, actually, is Gamescom, and that's entirely public. So, Alex, what are your thoughts on Gamescom first? Let's hear about this.
Okay. Well, the first day was press only, I think. And then after that, it opened to the public, and that's when the fun stopped, pretty much straight away. I think that we probably did it wrong in the sense that David and I, when we went, we didn't really do enough setting up of meetings with developers and everything behind the scenes, because after that first day on the show floor where we could basically play as much as we wanted without too much queuing, it was hell on earth every day after that. We had to queue to walk through halls, like not for an actual game, not to play something, just to walk from one place to another. And we quickly realized that I think we booked in maybe 3 or 4 days there, that was too much, because it's just not worth it. After that, it's after the first day when you could play pretty much anything, that the rest of it is just a complete waste of time. And it was clearly oversold. And anyone who actually paid money for that, I don't know how much they got to even do. I mean,
so I read your articles,
I've read yours as well.
Yeah, and so you've read my articles, and so it seems like we both had a terrible time at E3 and Gamescom, and for similar reasons. Yeah. And the thing is, like, Tim, I think E3 nowadays is sort of like a big mystery box. Like, you have no idea what you're going to get when you step inside. You're going to spend a lot of money, and you're not going to get your money's worth. Nope. And it's a complete and utter mess. And I don't know, like, you've gone to E3 for, like, years and years, so you know more than I, but I kind of feel like just including the public into E3 was just like a big, huge mistake. And maybe they needed to do it for whatever reasons. Like, maybe they just want to make more money or need to make more money. I think it was the wrong decision. I think by Sony pulling out of E3, and I know, we don't know, like, they might go back in 2020. We don't know. I doubt it. I think Nintendo kind of changed the game with the Nintendo Directs. Nintendo will still be present at E3 next year. But, like, let's face it, like if you go to E3 and you're not press, you're, in my opinion, it's an experience. I'm not going to say you're wasting your money, but I don't think you get your money's worth. Like, for you to line up for 4.5 hours to play Pokemon Let's Go, that is not fun. Like, it's not fun to line up for 4.5 hours to play one game. And at E3, I think, Tim, I think if I'm not mistaken, there's about 25,000 people. Gamescom had, what, 88,000, maybe more?
Yeah, something like that. I've been to EGX, which was quite a big one in the, it was probably the biggest one in the UK, I think. It used to be called the Eurogamer Expo. So I've been there as the public, not as the press. So I've actually paid to go to those shows before, and you definitely do not get your money's worth. So, and that was on the smallest scale I've ever been to, and it was still terrible, because I think, as I wrote in my news piece last week, like, you start to think to yourself after a while that you've paid money to sweat and stand around to play a game for sort of 5 minutes when your backlog is sitting in your comfortable house not getting played. There's nothing better about a game just because it's not come out yet. It's still a game the same way all your other games are games. You've just, this one requires you to pay more money and play less of it and then leave and not play it for a few months afterwards. It seems like, if you're not there for reporting purposes and you're not there to have the freedom to do as much as you can possibly do in a day rather than wait around, I really don't know why you'd bother.
Like, my first E3 was Breath of the Wild was coming out, and that line was like 3 hours, but you've got like 40 minutes with the game. And as a press person, I thought that was incredible. I thought it was well worth the wait, but I was also doing it so that the next couple days I could write articles on this revolutionary Zelda game and talk about it on a multitude of podcasts. And I kept wondering, like, if you weren't going for that illicit purpose, why would you bother? Like, yeah, you could tell your mom, I played Zelda before it's out. Like, cool. Like, who cares? You know what? In 6 months, the game's out. So cool. You played it early. I hope you had fun with that.
You could replicate that at home quite easily as well. Like, anyone who's never been to one of these, go stand outside your house for 3 hours, come in, play one of your favorite games for 10 minutes, and then leave. That is it. That is your experience right there.
The thing is, you're also describing, that's not too far off from the press experience, too. You may have had press only that first day, but the rest of the day, you're standing in line like everybody else.
Yeah.
And that's the way our experience is at E3. You can make lots of appointments, and that's good, but you can only make so many appointments in a day because there's delays. You can't cut things so close that you miss appointments. So maybe what? You get in 5 or 6 appointments a day if you're lucky, right? And you can keep all of those. But after that, you're just standing in line like everybody else, and it's what letting the public into E3 anyway has done is it's lessening their coverage, which I think is the exact opposite of what they want. They're only now you're reaching these people who basically can go tell 5 or 6 friends versus the journalists who can tell a couple thousand people with an article. You let in somebody who's just off the street, and yeah, they get to play this game for 10 minutes that they won't get to play for another 4 months. And they'll tell maybe 5 people about it. How is that good for the business? I don't really understand that.
Well, it's good for E3 if they're selling like 88,000 tickets and are making money off of it. But here's the thing. So when we went to E3, just to be clear, I had a really bad time in Los Angeles as a whole. At E3, we were lucky. We got into Nintendo's VIP booth. And then later the next day, we got invited back into Nintendo's show floor. And well, not show floor, their press room. Yeah. And we got to stay in the press room for like hours. And then later, Tim, myself, and Ryan, we got into Sony's private sort of like press room, which was beautiful. It had couches. You could sit down, relax, play Spider-Man for like 45 minutes. And like they weren't kicking us out. So it has press, you know. And Patrick, you and I went to Bethesda's behind the scenes, like crazy ice cream truck. Let's give you guys all kinds of merch and you guys can play these games. Like that was like really awesome of them.
Yeah. They were very nice to us, and having a press badge definitely gives you an advantage. There's no question about that. But a lot of the time we were just standing around.
But the thing is now, so the thing is, I said this like a while back on the podcast, I'm like, there really isn't much of a need for Nintendo to show up at E3 if they were doing their digital events. Like for them, they're spending money for this gigantic show floor, and I was like, I don't understand why they would continue to do it. They're still going to do it for now.
Well,
but now
I'll tell you why. It's because Nintendo has this sort of image where they interact with the public more than anybody else. Nintendo, remember they do these mall things where they take the games around the country, and they do these, like, road trip. They're appearing right now at malls, I believe, with Super Smash Bros. And stuff. They do a lot of public things at Best Buys. They really do get out there, and I think for them, E3, they don't need a conference, because I don't think the directs have obviously taken over that. But I think they still like to interact with the public. So if E3 stays a public thing, Nintendo will still probably have a big presence there, because that's kind of their thing, too.
So I totally agree. But the thing is, what I was going to say was, like, unlike Sony, and to some extent even Xbox, what Nintendo is doing is they're smart, because they have their digital direct, which anyone can watch from anywhere. Like, you just need the internet, right? You could be on a bus. You can watch the Nintendo Direct, right? But the thing is, it's not just a Nintendo Direct, and that's what people forget. They have Treehouse. For 3 days, they are streaming live from E3, and anyone in the world can watch what's happening at E3. And that is the main difference between Sony and Nintendo and Nintendo and Microsoft. Microsoft has their on-screen sort of like event. Sony has the stage event as well. They're not doing something like Nintendo does with the Treehouse. They do have like a Q&A, and they interview people and they show footage throughout the day on if you follow them on Twitter and stuff, but not sort of like a dedicated event, like sort of like a TV channel like Nintendo has, where you can watch Treehouse from 9 in the morning till 5 p.m. 3 days in a row. And that's why Nintendo's smart, because they realize, like, yeah, they're spending all this money going to E3, setting up this big stage and booth and whatever, but they're getting their money's worth because they're streaming everything. And I think that's what Sony and Microsoft doesn't realize. But now E3, just so you know, Alex, because you didn't go. So when you're at E3, Nintendo and Sony are side by side, and they have, like, of course, the biggest show floor, right? Sony has the biggest, I think Nintendo's second. And this year, Microsoft actually moved out of E3. They actually went to the Microsoft building. So although it's technically part of E3, they're not even in the same building. So now you got Microsoft in the Microsoft building. You got Sony that's not showing up. So basically all what E3 used to be, like, that space just kind of like shrunk by 2/3.
I think what we haven't really hit on is yes, people can watch Nintendo play Nintendo games for 3 straight days, but I think a lot of the times what people want is an honest opinion from an honest-to-God fan. Like, I'm not saying that anyone would ever do this, but it's been very clear on the show. I'm a very rabid Smash Bros. Fan. I really love Smash Bros. It's what I've been playing my entire life. I'd never compete, really. I've been in, like, 1 or 2 tournaments, but never seriously. But I love Smash Bros., and I love it to death. And so I think that the big difference here is that sometimes you don't want to just watch Nintendo play Nintendo games. You want to hear from a fan and a trusted voice, like, what do you think about the new Smash Bros? And I feel like that is in a very precarious position because, you know, we've spent a lot of time, like, curating our voices and working on approaching these things with a journalistic perspective. I'm not saying that we have perfect integrity here, but we try to approach this as unbiased as possible. Or sometimes we allow our biases to shine through because it's a better voice and it brings a better opinion. I feel like that kind of experience is dying out because we have really, really fast media getting by far the best experiences. IGN gets to do whatever they want the entire time. And now we are getting shoved out by the public. So for anyone that wants just to hear from a very specific voice, you know, instead you have to go to the millions of YouTubers who have 3 followers and happen to play it, who are just going to try to get hype going by, I don't know, exaggerating everything they do because they're on video. So,
well, but the problem is, regardless if you have 3 followers or 300,000 followers, a lot of these YouTubers and quote unquote journalists and bloggers, and I'm not saying everyone, I'm not trying to generalize, but a lot of them, because, you know, there's like everyone wants to be a film critic, a video game journalist, a YouTuber, whatever. They don't understand the simplest things, like, for example, capitalism. You know what I mean? Like Blizzard does this big announcement for Diablo Mobile. Everyone's angry. Who do they attack? Who does everyone attack? They attack the poor game developer. Like, nobody's, like, attacking maybe the CEO of Blizzard, who's making $28 million in bonuses this year, who basically is telling people what to do, while the poor video game developer who spends his days sweating, bleeding, like, just agonizing, going crazy over developing these games. Like, Diablo 3 was a 10-year, like, hell cycle for the guy. You know, they go on Twitter and they start harassing who? Who are they harassing? Are they harassing the bigwigs at Nintendo, or are they harassing Sakurai? You know, and so there's all these, like, freaking idiots online that don't understand how the video game industry works, or, sorry, capitalism, or just big companies in general. And I think that these poor video game developers who have a passion for creating these video games are the ones that are deciding, yeah, we're going to make a Diablo phone game because that's what I want to do and it's my creative vision. Or I want to include this character in the game because that's what I want to do. Like, they don't understand there's, like, all these moving parts and people screaming orders at them and telling them what to do and what not to do. Same with loot boxes. I'm so sick and tired of people complaining about loot boxes. You don't like loot boxes, don't buy loot boxes.
Don't buy, yeah.
Like, they'll stop doing it straight up. Like, they will stop. Like, I mean, if it's a hot summer day and I'm a 12-year-old kid and it's like 40 degrees outside, 40 degrees is like about 120 for you guys in the U.S. Fahrenheit versus Celsius.
I was not translating at first. I was like, what?
It's a hot day at 40 degrees, Tim.
it's bloody hot. You're melting, right? You're melting. And like, you're outside and you're a 12-year-old kid and you're selling lemonade, right? And, like, you know, you spent a dollar on the jug that you bought at the grocery store. But you're going to sell a small cup for like $5 and someone's going to pay $5 for your lemonade because they just will. So are you going to lower your price to 50 cents or are you going to sell for $5? You're going to sell for $5. Like, why would the company stop doing it? You're giving them money. You are giving them money. Why don't you just roll up, drive up to like the head offices at Blizzard or EA and just give them your whole month paycheck? Just give them like $5,000 straight up. Because you're giving away money. And I'm just like, the thing that's so frustrating is everyone's on Twitter and the internet and YouTube complaining and bitching and bitching and bitching, and it's not making a difference. Like, I'm so sick and tired of people on social media. They think they're going to make a difference because they're tweeting every 2 seconds about whatever rage, like whatever they're pissed off about. Like, they're pissed off about this company doing so-and-so decision. Like you're not changing anything, and yet you're spending your money on the damn game.
Oh, they're not, and it's the kids who don't go on there doing that are spending all the money. When I used to work for Blockbuster, I'm pretty sure the only people who ever bought Microsoft points for FIFA Ultimate Team was kids bringing in their like 20 quid from their mum, and their parents would just be somewhere at the back of the store just letting them do whatever. And that's probably what a lot of people miss, I guess, is the ones getting angrier, I guess the hardcore adult gamers who, you know, are trying to make a stand. But it's not necessarily them that are actually engaging with all of these practices, and we're getting a disconnect there that the people who are actually spending the money are the quiet ones who we don't hear from. They just get on with it and just accept it and whatever. This is how games is. Off I go. Here's my money. So
we got a lot to talk about. We still got to talk about Pokemon, but just, I guess, to end this conversation, like, what do you guys think? Like, in all honesty, what do you think about, because Nintendo's not really like a company like EA where they try to like steal your money and charge you like $100 for like a skin. But what do you think about them releasing the extra five characters for Super Smash for an additional cost after the game comes out, when they've already pretty much started making these characters? Like, why not just include them in the actual game for free?
Because that means that development would take another year. The thing to consider here is that let's watch the E3 video again in our minds really quick. They make endless adjustments to the games and to the roster in between each entry in the franchise. Like, of all developers, I feel like Sakurai and everyone working specifically on Smash, whatever his team is called, I can't remember right now, they work tirelessly. Yeah, Sora, thank you so much. To make these games as nearly flawless as possible, and it really shows. And so in the 5 years since the Wii U title, whatever it's been, we have gotten a totally rebalanced, redone game with 75 characters already in it. I want that as soon as possible. They should launch it as soon as possible. If at that point, when the game is ready to launch, they start another five characters that for, what, $20, I can get all five on top of new stages and new cosmetics or whatever, that's a screaming good deal. At that point, I think it's totally okay, because it's not something that's just time-gated, that's already built into the game. They're building it after the fact, and that's the most honest way to do this.
Yeah, I mean, DLC is a little bit different from microtransactions or something like that. Hopefully you're not. Then Nintendo also made it very, very clear, like, don't pay for it, don't pre-order the DLC unless you're sure that you're going to get a value out of it. Sakurai said that right on screen. I think that that's fine. I personally, they did this with the Wii U version, and, you know, you can either think it's too expensive and not get it. I didn't buy Smash 4 anyway, but the DLC looked expensive to me. I don't think I would pay that much for a fighter, because I'm not that into the game. But if you are into the game, and that's going to make a huge difference for you, having these five extra fighters, then absolutely, it's totally worth it to you. To me, that's
it's weird though, because a lot of people are upset about Soul Calibur, the recent Soul Calibur 4, because they basically released a lot of characters that were in the original games after the game got released, and you have to buy these characters. So they're pretty much trying to make as much money as they can for all these additional characters that you can get in, that this should have been included in the game. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm
like,
not,
didn't EA
I'm
do that with Battlefront
it.
Too? Like with Darth Vader, he was going to be insanely hard to get if you weren't going to purchase him or something like that at first.
Yeah, if you didn't pre-order the game, you wouldn't be able to get a specific character, like all kinds of garbage. But the thing is, it's like, I'm not entirely upset about it. I mean, I bought all the DLC for the Wii U version. But the thing is, I am adding an extra $25 into the actual game. So like, I mean, Alex, I don't know how expensive games are for you in Europe, but in Canada, Super Smash Brothers or any Nintendo first party exclusive, like new release cost $92.
Whoa. I think it was just over £50 here. So
yeah, so
that's like $100 US.
Yeah. Right, so you add on the DLC, and then my game's going to cost me roughly about $140-$150. And I don't know, like, I mean, I know how expensive it is to make games. I know how long it takes to make games. I guess the thing is, I would have been more okay if they just gave us those characters for free and charged us for stages, because in my opinion, like, those characters are actually part of, like, the game. Like, I mean, it's like, imagine say they release Waluigi, right? And I don't know what it's like to play against Waluigi or play with Waluigi, because I did not have the money I did not want to pay the extra money for Waluigi. And I go to a Super Smash tournament, all of a sudden I'm playing against Waluigi. Like, that's kind of, like, essential for me to understand how to play against Waluigi and how to play with Waluigi. But if he's not included in the actual game, then to me, like, that's where I find it's, like, sketchy. Okay. It's not like including a skin or something.
But if you're going to a Smash Brothers tournament, that Smash Brothers is clearly important to you, and putting down $5 to get a chance to play that character is probably going to be totally reasonable to you if you're in that situation. Like, that's how much Smash means to you. It means more than the $5 that you have to part with in order to get a character. I think the thing is, DLC is just going to be a way of life for video games now, and whether that means new campaigns like in Splatoon 2 or new tracks like in Mario Kart 8, you know, when the Wii U did that. New characters is pretty much what you do with a fighting game. That is where you have your DLC. Now, I don't think anybody could claim that Smash Brothers Ultimate is not a complete game. With that many characters, you are receiving new characters. It's not like they basically took all the old characters and then every single new character is going to be DLC. They're giving you plenty of new characters in this new version. So, in order for them to keep the game going, if they want to have DLC, there's only a few things that they can really do, and characters is the big one. So, to me, it just makes sense. They're giving you a complete game. I think people mostly complain about DLC when they feel like the game wasn't complete in the first place. But with Smash Bros. Ultimate, this feels like it's a huge game and a great deal for the amount of money that you're paying for just the base game. So I feel like it's fine if they want to add 5 new characters. If you feel like that's too expensive, don't buy them. But there are plenty of people who are going to want the whole thing complete, and it's going to be worth the $20 or $25.
Yeah, I don't think that's too unreasonable a price point either. Like, $5 seems okay to me. I think the marketing around this is probably where it succeeds the most because, I mean, you can call me naive possibly, but the way that they present this DLC as the new characters, you see Sakurai there, who we all know like kills himself to make these games pretty much. And he's coming at this from a standpoint of, we're trying to add in the things that you guys want us to add in at a later date, and it's going to cost a little bit more money. But as Tim was saying, you know, it's going to get the game released on time anyway. So I think the way they portray it is it doesn't ever look as if it's dishonest or for any reason other than we're going to add new content, extend the life of the game, and we know who you want in it, so we're going to try and add them later. I think the way they put it across to people comes across as one of the more earnest ways of asking for a little bit extra after the fact compared to, you know, Battlefront, like you were saying earlier, or Call of Duty Black Ops 4 at the moment, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, what other company would say, don't buy this unless you're absolutely sure? No other company would ever say, don't buy our product unless you're sure that it's going to be of value.
Yeah, you never see Papa Jeff Kaplan of the Overwatch team go on YouTube and say, hey, we're releasing a new Halloween event. Do not buy the Halloween loot boxes because they're the same exact characters, just they look different. That's unheard of. He would never do that. He's going to say that these skins are sexy and that you're going to think, I want them, and then you're going to throw down $50 on what is purely cosmetics.
Yeah, well, I mean, and just to close off this conversation, like, Nintendo did say, or at least Reggie said, that before they even think about making DLC, regardless if it's free or pay, they just want a finished product. They want a game that works, that's fully functional, that's not broken. They're going to release it. It's perfect, or, you know, like, it's not at least broken or, like, whatever, or missing parts. And then they can think about DLC down the road. And last thing I'm going to say about this is I do think that of the 5 characters we're going to get, I think 3, if not 4 of the 5 are going to be third-party characters. And that's the whole thing, right? Like, they're going to team up with, like, Ubisoft and Microsoft, and we're going to get something like Rayman or Rabbids and Steve and or Banjo. And they're going to be making the extra money, but they're going to be splitting the profit with those companies. That's why I honestly believe that. True. 4 or 5, if not 3 of those characters, are going to be third-party characters.
That makes sense.
Is one of them the Piranha Plant? I'm pretty sure the one of the 5 is
no,
the
Piranha Plant. He's free for doing that.
He's free as long as you buy the game before January 31st. And then
yeah, because then you buy him after, don't you?
Yeah, but he's not one of the 5.
Okay.
Yep. But one of the 5 is Sephiroth. That's not true, but I want it to be, so I'm going to keep putting it into the mind space. Because I have control. So we talked a lot about entitled fans and how often they get in the way. And so often when a developer does something different that's not going to interfere with the development of the next game, let's say, I don't know, Blizzard's new mobile experience, it's not going to get in the way of the next Diablo game. It's going to be something totally different on the side. Sometimes those experiences are really, really cool and really fun to to experience and enjoy. And we have that situation now with Nintendo and the Pokemon Company, as they wanted to try something new before the next main series Pokemon game came out. And so now we have Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu Edition and Eevee Edition. And Patrick and I have been playing those. Patrick's actually beaten the game. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss those. And Rick and Alex will help us out. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to N-Express. The final segment is here, a discussion of Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu Edition, and Eevee Edition. We were just talking about E3, and at E3, we played plenty of these games, and we all walked away with some very positive thoughts on the experience overall. So much so that Patrick actually bought it, despite being not a Pokemon, I don't know, hater, but just not a fan.
No, I don't hate it at all. I don't get it. And I still don't get it after playing this game, but okay, so here was my experience with Pokemon. For the podcast, I played about half of Yellow, and I did this 2 years ago. That was the first time ever playing a Pokemon game, because I believe it came out on the Wii U eShop, a virtual console. And then I played Moon when that came out, which I liked, and then promptly sold as soon as I beat it, because I think I caught... There's a couple of things, a couple of points that I want to start off with Let's Go, Tim, if you'll let me here. When I played Moon, I think I caught maybe 30 to 40 Pokemon in that game, but otherwise I just blazed through all the trainer battles and went right through the end and beat it, and then didn't interact with the game at all beyond any of that point, because I'm not really much of a collector when it comes to stuff like that. I found the Pokemon collecting to be kind of tedious. I didn't like having to run around randomly hoping that the ones, you know, that a different Pokemon would show up, then hoping that I could weaken the thing enough to actually capture it and not kill it or whatever before that happened. And then hope that my Pokeball actually worked and the thing didn't end up running away. So I kind of gave up after about 30, 40 Pokemon. I didn't really care anymore. And most of that was done at the beginning of the game. So Let's Go comes out and there, you know, the capture mechanics are going to work very, very differently. And that piqued my interest. Not because I love Pokemon Go so much or anything like that. I haven't played it for, you know, probably since that magical summer when it first came out. But I liked the idea of not having to battle Pokemon. And I thought maybe that would help me. And I like being able to see, the idea of being able to see the Pokemon out in the wild so that you can engage with the ones that you want to engage with and not have to, you know, run around randomly. Anyway, this game totally worked, Tim. I still can't say that I get Pokemon, but I think I was playing it closer to what the developers probably intended, which is capturing Pokemon. They want you to capture Pokemon and to go out and look for different ones, right? And to experiment with your team. And in that sense, I think Pokemon Let's Go has worked for me better than the other Pokemon and a half games. I think it's fair to say that having played 1.5 Pokemon games, this is the greatest Pokemon game of all time.
Wait, Patrick, I got to ask a question, though, because you and I are on the same page. I'm not a big fan of Pokemon. I think we played the same number of games, Yellow and Sun and Moon. But so the thing is, have you played Pokemon Go?
Yes, I played it when it came out for like 3 or 4 months.
So because I'm just trying to get some like understanding of this game, because I decided I just didn't want to pick it up. I'm going to skip it completely. But from my understanding, this is a perfect blend of Pokemon Go, one of the most successful one of the most popular games ever, still one of the most popular games ever, a phenomenon. Like hundreds of millions of people were playing that game. And then it's a mix between that and Yellow, like one of the most beloved, like...
It's a remake of Yellow.
Right, a remake of Yellow with the sort of mechanics and structure similar to Let's Go, like they mold the two games. So you have one of the most beloved RPG Pokemon games ever, handheld games too, like take it on the go, and then you mix it with Pokemon Go mixed with Pokemon Yellow, and to me that seems like a winning combination. And yet I know it has a lot of like people that are just raving about it, but it has a lot of pushback too. There's a lot of people that don't like it, and so from my understanding it's just dumbed down, like to the point where it's like easier than it should be.
Okay, so here's the thing. It all depends on, say, what they call easier, I call less tedious. Again, I think that the capture mechanics in the original Pokemon games are just tedious. I don't care for capturing Pokemon. They give me no incentive. It seems like a waste of my time because I don't have that mentality where I want to catch them all. And I don't want to spend hours running through grass hoping that a random Pokemon pops up and then having to either do battle or constantly run away from other Pokemon just so that I can get the one that I want. What this game does is it paces things so much better. Now, I get that traditionalists will not like the capture mechanics because you're not battling the Pokemon and weakening him, and maybe they consider that to be more of a challenge, and maybe that's part of the fun for them. Fine. I do not. I considered that to be boring. The fun parts of Pokemon were when I was actually, you know, battling a trainer or whatever. But I never captured in Moon, and I never captured in Yellow for the half or two-thirds of it that I actually played. I didn't bother because I hated it. What this does is it gives you the Pokemon Go... The only thing that really changes is the capture mechanics in this game. And it takes what Pokemon Go does, which is, you know, the Pokemon appears on the screen and you throw a ball at it, you know, and there's a little ring that you try to get as close to being, you know, a small ring as possible and landing in the center of that, and that gives you a great or a nice or an excellent throw, and that increases your odds of capturing that Pokemon. So that's how the capture mechanic works, and you see the Pokemon out in the wild. You see them walking around in the grass. So you know that if you have one of these things already, you don't have to go up and get that if you don't want to.
Right. So
we could talk about combos later. But
I get that. So like it simplifies like it's basically less grinding. Like you said, I don't want to keep on running to like what's his name, Pidgey.
Yeah.
Like every 2 seconds, right? But the thing is, this is what I'm baffled and confused about is. The thing about this Pokemon game, and let's just be real here, like it's a huge success. It sold over 3 million copies already. People seem to like it. The majority of people seem to like it. But the weird thing is, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I hear, the whole point or the reason why people were excited, because even though it's not like technically a core Pokemon game, even though that can be argued,
it's really close though.
But it's the first Pokemon game on a home console. Yet I hear that. It's actually to your advantage if you don't play it docked. It's better to play it handheld mode.
All right, so let me get to this right now. So, Tim, I don't know which version you bought, but I actually thought, you know what? I don't play Pokemon very often. I'm going to go all out, man. And I bought the one with the Pokeball Plus.
Yeah.
So I will tell you this, Rick. Now, maybe this is just me, but I'm a Nintendo guy, and motion controls have never bugged me. They do bug a lot of people. I enjoyed playing this in docked mode with the Pokeball Plus more than I enjoyed playing it in handheld mode, because that level of interactivity did enhance the game for me. I enjoyed making the throwing motion. I liked the tactile feedback that I got from the Pokeball Plus, where it would vibrate, where it would click, where, you know, I could hear the Pokemon yelling inside it. There was something about it. I never found the throw to be a problem. I know that motion controls can get a little janky every now and again, and maybe you have a missed throw, but there are so many ways to get Pokeballs in this. I never felt like I was ever going to run out of Pokeballs. So a missed throw didn't bug me all that much, and it didn't happen all that often. So like I said, in Moon, I caught maybe 30 to 40 Pokemon, and this one, I think I finished the game with 102. It's because I enjoyed capturing stuff, and I would grind sometimes. The capture mechanic also gains you experience. Like, every time you capture a Pokemon, all your Pokemon in your party get experience. And you can chain combos together. So if you keep catching the same Pokemon, you'll start to get more experience points, XP, out of those Pokemon that are captured. Also, you'll increase the odds that rare Pokemon will appear, and you'll increase the odds that a shiny Pokemon will appear if you care about those sorts of things. And Tim can talk more about that. So, but I spent a lot of time doing that. There were times where I found a certain Pokemon that would give me a good deal of XP, and then I would just hang around there and start chaining them to grind my guys up just a little bit. It wasn't never too much grinding. I never spent more than 15 minutes or so, but I enjoyed the motion controls.
Is there gym battles?
Oh, yes. It's just like, to me, this was just like, this is a normal Pokemon game. I want to get this out of the way right. This is not like a dumbed down version of Pokemon too much. Other than the capture mechanic, nothing has changed. This is Pokemon Yellow, where you have trainer battles all over the place. You'll be fighting people constantly.
There's one point where to get from the first gym to the second gym, you legitimately have to battle like 40 trainers.
Yeah, there's like a road that goes along the ocean on the East Coast. Oh my God, it was like never ending. It was so many battles. But yes, this is just a normal Pokemon game. The only thing that has changed is the way that you capture Pokemon. That is it. Otherwise, you are battling gyms. There's just 8 gyms. There's going to be the Elite Four at the end. There's the little surprise ultimate boss at the end. It has some cool surprises, Tim, that I wasn't aware of. I don't know if I want to spoil them for people, but there were those birds that are located all around those legendary...
The original legendary tree.
I knew nothing about those, and the first time I ran into one, I was like, what the hell is this? Because I never got that far in Yellow.
Pretty dope, though, right?
It was
exciting.
Pretty cool. That was like an exciting moment. My heart was pumping. I was like, because I also knew nothing about how I was going to capture this thing. I think I went through 100 Ultra Balls on the first one before he finally came through, and I was like, oh my God, is he going to run away? Is he going to run away? And then I read later that they're not going to run away, but even still, it was a cool moment, and I thought that was
As like the person that plays a ton of Pokemon, like you don't even stop to consider that two of those birds eliminate the weakness of flying Pokemon. Like they're electric and ice are both super effective against birds, and two of those totally eliminate that. So they're like really rare and really cool.
Oh, Articuno was in my party after I got.
Yeah, that. Good pick. That's the best one.
He's a pretty good one. Anyway, but yeah, Rick. To me, it was having played Moon, which was the last Pokemon, core Pokemon game to come out. This felt exactly the same except for the capture mechanic, which I so loved more than the normal capture mechanic. Cannot stress that enough. I loved this way more. I would so much rather have this be the way that you capture Pokemon than the normal battling them. That's my opinion. I'm not a core Pokemon player, but to me, I found this to be far more engaging, and the proof is that I caught over twice as many Pokemon. I actually made it a point to go out and seek new Pokemon to catch and to expand my Pokedex. That is...
You guys really want me to spend my money. You really want me to spend my money.
It's you legitimately should buy this game.
Alex, are you a Pokemon fan?
Probably a lapsed fan, I'd say. The last one I played, I think, was... What was the Ruby and Sapphire remakes called?
Wasn't that, like, the worst?
Alpha Sapphire?
Yeah.
The most hated of all of the generations?
Isn't that the Too Much Water one from IGN?
Yeah,
isn't that
is
that thing?
Yeah. 7 out of 10 Too Much Water.
Yeah. I think I played X or Y as well, one of those. One thing I was going to ask before I go into anything else is, how does... if you don't have to battle the wild Pokemon to capture them, how does the grinding for training your own Pokemon come after that? Like, can you challenge the other trainers as much as you want, or are there a finite amount of them and then you just have to start a new game? How does that work?
So after after you beat everybody, yeah, there are a finite amount of trainers and you can't re-challenge them, but there are a bunch of new trainers that appear after you've beaten the final guy. And so you can go out and fight them. I honestly, by the end of the game, I had so much money that I could, that buying Pokeballs was never going to be a problem. And I think I could have trained up a lot of Pokemon, no problem. I can't say it's like, I didn't go into the end game too far because I didn't really care to start getting specialized in certain Pokemon. So for me, that was pretty much it. And then there was a lot of things like, okay, the reason why I didn't fill up my Pokedex is because a lot of the Pokemon I was going to have to evolve. in order to get them, they weren't going to be able to be captured in the wild. So, you know, but I went and got Mewtwo, who was also very cool, like, surprise. But there's, I had so much money that buying Pokeballs wasn't going to be a problem, and you can get a lot of experience just by going around and capturing Pokemon and chaining combos. If you start
to your whole party?
What's that?
Yes, yes, it's split across your entire party, like an experience share. Yep.
And you can get massive chunks. So if you start really chaining your combos and then looking for, they're not shiny Pokemon, but they're ones that are like either tiny or huge.
So, yeah, size differences.
Size different ones. You start to like, if you've chained a combo together and then you see a huge one, for instance, my God, will you get an incredible amount of XP for getting one of those.
So like, this is where there's like a bit more strategy, and like Patrick alluded to, I think this game is intended as like a great introduction or something that you can play with your kid who's maybe never played a Pokemon game. But this is where it gets like a little bit more engaging for more experienced players, is that like he's saying there's like a lot to go that goes on with the catching mechanics, including comboing, and like he was saying about trying to get a perfect throw. If you get an excellent throw, you get more experience. If that Pokemon is...
There's like several multipliers that can be in effect for the XP.
So if you're on a huge combo and you're only catching tiny and massive Pokemon and you're getting excellent throws every single time, then by the time you're on like 30 Pokemon, you're getting a ton of experience. So that like early on in the game, my Pikachu is like level 25 and I've gone through two gyms. So like he's way stronger than he needs to be.
Okay, I have a question for you, and I should have asked James because he wrote the review on our website, which, by the way, listeners, go read it. James, the review that James wrote on our website is pretty awesome, but this is what I don't understand. I wanted to understand the whole training Pokemon and the Safari Zone. Like, how does the Safari Zone work?
So you can import Pokemon from Pokemon Go. So you'll connect up, and you can bring Pokemon from whatever you've caught in Pokemon Go. You can actually bring them to Let's Go, and they can join your party or, you know, be in your Pokedex from there. Just be warned, they will be gone from your Pokemon Go account, and they will not come back.
Wait, like you
can't put them back into Pokemon Go. So once you brought them over.
So what is the Safari Zone then?
Well, that is the Safari Zone. It's no longer the same Safari Zone as it was in Yellow, from what I understand, Tim. That it is now strictly like this Pokemon Go zone.
Yeah, Safari Zone used to be an area where you couldn't battle Pokemon. You could only just throw balls and try to capture some really rare Pokemon. Now it's been replaced with the Go Zone. Is that what it's called?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something.
I didn't spend too much time there because I didn't really...
Here's what James wrote in his review. Indeed, training Pokemon in general is a mess, something that didn't need changing from previous games. The best approach to trade with friends will be to meet up and trade locally, as the online system is dysfunctional.
It's exaggerated, but so here's how it works. Is rather than like having friend codes and dealing with that and then just finding your friend directly, one of you types in some code that you have like 9 Pokemon to choose from, and you can make a combo of 3. So for example, you could do like Pikachu, Pikachu, Bulbasaur. And then you tell your friend, type in Pikachu, Pikachu, Bulbasaur. But then you might encounter someone who had happened to use the same exact code at the same time.
Right.
But at any time you can cancel that. So I've traded with Ryan twice and I've had no issues with it. It's actually really, really fast, responsive, and neat. It's just that connecting with each other is a little gimmicky.
Right, and you live near, well, I mean, close enough to Ryan, right? Because what James writes in his review, to just continue, he says, this highlights two problems. Firstly, trading with anybody across the world is now much more difficult. And secondly, trading with a friend is much more difficult, as occasionally the player will end up trading with someone completely different to who they intended.
But you can just look at the trainer name. That's like listed right away. And it's like, if I'm looking for Cappy, that's Ryan. And I type in his code, and it says, like, Danny Boy. Like, don't trade with Danny Boy. It's that simple. Like, just cancel and try again. It's going to happen every now and again. And I get what he's saying. It used to be really easy. You could just go into – there used to be the global trading system, which would let you, like, look for any old Pokemon, period, and just go find a trade that someone's offering. And that was an incredible system. But that's really not the point of Let's Go. Let's Go has like 151 Pokemon plus a bunch of new Alola forms, plus two new Pokemon that you can only get through Go. So it's not really that hard to get all these Pokemon. So there's not, you know, 800 Pokemon to try to get. And I think I understand where he's coming from. If you're a long-term fan, then this is a bit frustrating. And the global trade system was so great. Plus, you had other really fun features like Wonder Trade, where you could literally trade with anyone, anywhere, and you had no idea what you were getting, or like, it was just kind of like an honor system. You don't have anything like that here. But okay, for the sake of actually like trying to complete your Pokedex with your friends, I think it's very easy. It's not the most elegant, but it's very easy.
It would not have taken me too much time to get everything in-game, really. Almost everything in-game. There are a few differences. There's a few Pokemon that you cannot get because the different versions have them. You know, Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu have a few exclusives. But other than that, like I think it would not have taken me too long. I was at 102, and honestly, I really just had to evolve a few things, which wouldn't have taken too long at all. And maybe just hunt around a little further for some extremely rare ones. But yeah, I could have pretty much done almost all of it.
So my closing thoughts as a very hardcore Pokemon fan would be that maybe this isn't the game for you on the surface, but there is a lot to engage with. I think that this, beyond being a great introductory game, is a game that is actually directed at Pokemon fans, in that some of the stuff that's included are some really, really fun references to the show, actually. Like, Patrick got to fight Jesse and James from the animated series. And that, as a longtime Pokemon fan who used to watch the show back in the glory days, like, that's really fun. That's really engaging. The combo system is super great. It feels great. And it's really cool to catch some really rare Pokemon out in the wild, or to chain long enough that you have a much better chance to catch a shiny Pokemon. As someone who likes to collect Pokemon, that's incredibly cool. Shiny Charizard is way better than a regular Charizard. Have you seen him, Patrick?
I only saw shiny Rattata, and I captured him, and I was like, what? I don't get anything extra for this? Why do people like shinies?
No, go look at shiny Charizard, and you'll understand. But, you know, there's a lot to enjoy. The Pokeball Plus, I think, is phenomenal. It just feels good, right? That click when you capture it.
I liked it. I played the majority of the game I played with the Pokeball Plus. The only thing it's missing is a home button. But other than that, you get through the rest of the game on it.
I handed it to my mom. I went over to my parents' house and had it. I just, like, you know, had my Switch in handheld mode, but with the Pokeball Plus. So we were playing with that. And I just handed it to my mom, expecting her to try it once. And she went and caught, like, 15... to 20 Pokemon. She was really engaged.
My nieces, by the way, loved it. My 8-year-old nieces absolutely loved the Pokemon Plus too. So obviously this is a game for you know, kids, like Tim was saying, introductory Pokemon.
Yeah, so is it a little bit easier? Yes. Is it a little bit more user-friendly in a lot of regards? Yes, a lot less grinding. But I think what we have here is maybe a Pokemon game that will appeal to almost everyone, and I think that's great. Honestly, all that we have left to say is, Game Freak, the ball is in your court. I want Generation 8, and then promptly, I want Pokemon Let's Go, I don't know, Cyndaquil Edition.
That's what I was going to say,
Gold too. And Silver.
I think I want more Let's Go games. I almost would prefer another Let's Go game to, you know, the Generation 8. Again, not a hardcore Pokemon player, so maybe that's sacrilege to some people. But to me, this was my Pokemon game. The one that I was more interested in. It cut down all the grinding and the tediousness, and it got me to do the things. It got me more interested in finding Pokemon than I had been in the other games.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think it's a fun new way to play, so I sincerely hope this series continues. Maybe in place of the remakes. I think that this is a little bit more engaging because it's different.
What if the new core Pokemon game is actually the town? Mind blown.
I think there would be open revolt.
You don't know, like, we don't know much about the game. That could be a straight up new Pokemon game.
It could be. I think there are people who want that Generation 8, and they want it now. They don't want it to be any different than the other
ones. The idea of new Pokemon just gets me stoked beyond reason. So I need my Generation 8. Anyway, you guys, this has been a super fun episode. Alex, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks again for having me, guys.
Of course. Anytime. Where can we find you online?
On Twitter, I think it's Lalex Baldridge. You can find me there. Or you can just check me out. I do the weekly gaming news of the week on Goomba Stomp. Or you can check out the PlayStation podcast for Goomba Stomp, which is coming back this week. I'm recording that like probably in an hour from now, so I think I'm going to have no voice by the end of today. But that is the Not Red E podcast. And other than that, yeah, just that's it.
Yeah. So I recommend people listen to the Sony podcast if you play Sony games. I really like your structure. They have their they do really cool things, like when you guys are going through the alphabet, you're trying to pick out games that start with the letter A, and just going into the history of Sony. And yeah, I highly recommend it. And I honestly can't wait for it to come back. I need a PlayStation podcast in my life right now. Apart from Beyond, I don't really have a PlayStation podcast to listen to. So
We need guests on there at any point as well. So yeah, anyone's welcome on that, because it's just two of us. So after a while, we need some more people to go through the alphabet with us. We're going to add some more stuff this week as well. I've got some stupid ideas. So it's going to be a fun episode, I think, when we come back.
Awesome. You also need to read the news roundup every week on Goomba Stomp, because not only is it enlightening, your voice on those articles is very funny. And I always,
thank you, sir.
Yeah, I really, really enjoy those every week. So
I'd be happy to narrate that for sure. I might do that from now on.
Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. All right. Patrick, where can we find you?
You can always find me on Goomba Stomp too. I mostly run the Sorted Cinema film section, so you can check out all of our movie coverage. I've got a column of how to make an entrance, which is cataloging some of the best movie entrances of all time and what makes them so great from a filmmaking perspective, hopefully. But yeah, otherwise we've got plenty of reviews and retrospectives on there. Check it out. And, yeah, and of course, on Twitter, at Sorted Cinema.
And Rick, what about you?
You can find me on Goomba Stomp, of course. Just to let our listeners know, we had a problem with our iTunes feed. The iTunes feed seems to be working. Everything seems to be working except for Podbay. We have a new feed on Podbay. So if you used to listen to the podcast on Podbay and you somehow discovered this podcast via iTunes or on our website, and you want to go back and listen on Podbay, we are still on Podbay. But the point is, guys, if you go to the website, GoombaStomp.com, you look up the NXpress podcast, you'll find all the links to not only our Twitter handles, but where you can listen to the podcast online, like on iTunes and Podbay and Podbean, and God, I can't even keep up anymore. That said, somebody's having a baby very soon, and I got my money. I actually put money down on this, like $300. I'm waiting for – I actually need someone to bet with, so maybe Patrick, you and I can place that.
$300, you're out of your mind.
Tim and his wife have the baby on December 7th. The same day Super Smash gets released. That is what I predict.
And Tim, I will be, yeah.
What's going on? Tell our listeners, please, what is going on? Are you going to be away for a while? What the hell?
You guys, I'm going to disappear for a little bit. My wife's due date is December 1st, so that is quite literally this coming week. If baby is on time, then I will not be here for the next episode. I'm going to take some time off and hang out with my family, new members and all. And so consequently, the show's going on. We will have guests filling in my spot. Luckily, Goomba Stomp is chock full of amazing personalities like Alex, who joined us today. I'd be more than comfortable with him filling in for me I'm away. Yeah, so feel free to come back, Alex. So I might be gone for a month, maximum two. I will be back. I might be back to discuss Smash Bros. Because it's my other baby. my wife's in the other room's rolling her eyes, I'm sure. So I might be back for that episode, but don't expect too much of me. But feel free to contact me at Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter. Check out my stuff on Goomba Stomp. And luckily, the Game Boys has a backlog of a couple episodes that we've been building up. So that one might go on for a couple of weeks before they have to figure something out. But that's Ryan and Alex's problem and not mine. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you do listen, drop us a rating and a review. Goes a really long way. No listener question this week, but do write those to us. We will answer them on the air. We don't care how ridiculous they are. And feel free to have fun. And I don't know. Ask me something. Ask me something tricky. Last Game Boys, it hasn't gone up yet, but we did a really fun trivia. So like, test our knowledge on NXpress could be fun. Anyway, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you more next week with all things Nintendo. See you later.